It's 8:17 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, on Monday, Park City resident Christy Worthington held a public gathering at her house to learn more about the Our Schools Now initiative. She joins me now in the studio to tell us what kind of turnout and questions were asked. Good morning, Christy.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. The turnout was fantastic. I was very pleased with the turnout. We wanted representatives from each school and for the Park City School District and including Wileman and Winter Sports School, because this initiative will impact charter schools as well, and we had that, which was great. We are looking for two parent volunteers from Jeremy that are willing to help out and gather signatures.
Okay.
And
you're
very pleased.
State law requires this ballot initiatives to host like 7 meetings across the state. This was not one of those official meetings though, right?
Correct. This was a more casual meeting with parents to see who's willing to help gather signatures and get ahead of the game.
So this group that gathered at your house, they were all in support of this initiative then?
Correct.
Yeah. So did you have any local lawmakers attend? People like Tim Quinn and Logan Wilder, were they even invited? Because again, you were just headed for the...
Yeah, no, we did not have local lawmakers attend. And this meeting specifically was to get parents who wanted to gather signatures, and anybody that wanted more information was welcome to attend.
Okay. Did you have any people who did not support this?
No.
Okay. So it was really just more of a rallying, you know, to try and get some bodies on the ground here.
Yeah, absolutely. When I reached out to Austin Cox, the campaign manager for the Our Schools Now program, I guess I was one of the first to get on board. So we really just said, hey, let's get this signature gathering volunteers ahead of the game.
Okay.
So we could be ahead of the game.
So this Our School Now's initiative is basically put together by statewide business leaders and the Utah Education Association looking to put more money into state education. State lawmakers, on the other hand, say, you know what, that's our job. We'll do it through taxes. Did you have somebody from Our Schools Now there?
Yes, Austin Cox, the campaign manager.
There.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, what did he say about it, that just lawmakers aren't helping out? I mean, we just saw a pretty hefty increase in the weighted pupil unit this year.
Well, as parents, we know... I've been involved with school since my daughter entered kindergarten 10 years ago. We are tired of waiting for Utah legislators to increase per pupil spending. At the beginning of every school year, I think it's incredible that we are asked, and we just take it as a normal procedure, we're asked to donate supplies, basic classroom supplies every school year. Why do we do that? Why is that necessary? Why don't we increase our per pupil spending? So we're not asked for basic supplies every school year, and we just take it as that's normal.
So what would this initiative do to increase that per pupil spending? Do you have any idea?
Yes. So this initiative generates about $700 million a year, which would be nearly $1,000 per Utah school student. That puts back over half of the $1.2 billion schools lose every year from past tax cuts. Cuts that make Utah last in the nation per pupil spending year after year after year.
So would we be out of that last place spot with this increase?
No, we would not be. We still, with this initiative, if voters voted it in 2018, we would not catch Idaho, who is 49th.
Yeah. And what we hear from lawmakers is that, you know, you can't just throw money at problems. That Utah does an amazing job the way that we're currently funding education. And just to look at, just because we're at the bottom of it doesn't mean that we're at the bottom of the test scores or, you know, the graduation rates.
We do an incredible job thanks to our teachers. However, nearly half of first-year teachers in Utah quit within the first 5 years. It's time to put a value on teaching and raise teacher salaries. decrease class sizes, all of these things that we've been concerned with over the years, that the Utah legislators just don't simply have the guts to raise taxes. So this initiative bypasses what they are willing and proven that they won't do. If we gather signatures, this initiative allows the voters to decide if they want to increase per pupil spending.
Early polls that I've seen show that that would not pass, and it sounds like our schools now has kind of gone back to try and tinker with that formula. Where are we in that process at this point? Because we don't even have, I don't think, the final ballot language drafted, do we?
No, we don't have the final ballot language drafted. Well, it's happening so quickly, I might have misspoke. It might have been drafted. Where are we? We are going to start gathering signatures August 1st. That is where we legally can approach people and start gathering the signatures. We have to get 26 of the 29 Senate districts to get the 113,000 signatures needed to get this initiative on the ballot.
So do you have to have so many signatures in the Park City, Summit
yes.
County
yes.
district?
Yes, it's per Senate district. It's how it's broken up. And what we're asking, or how they've organized, how our schools now has organized, is about 400 signatures per elementary school. And in Park City, we also have the Wileman Sports School, the Winter Sports School, and the Wileman School of Discovery. The charter schools also benefit from the tax increase and increase in per pupil spending. So we are asking about $400 per school. Excuse me, 400 signatures per school, which is really doable when you think of an elementary school in Park City has about 400 to 500 students. And when you have, the students that have a couple parents per family, generally most do, that's two signatures. It's a really doable.
Yeah. So, in here, where are you guys going to be once you have those petitions in hand?
Okay, so the meeting on Monday night, we had representatives from all the schools, and they, if you're interested in helping gathering signatures, you can reach out to your school's PTO, and then they will direct you from there on where they're going to gather. And we are welcome to gather at back to school nights, high school football games, in front of grocery stores, any place where we want to gather a signature. And it doesn't, just because you sign this initiative doesn't mean that that's the way you're voting. That's your private business come 2018 and how you feel. It's just asking, we'd like to get this on the ballot because legislators won't.
Okay. How much time do you have to do that?
I believe it's March or April of 2018. But our goal is to collect the signatures before it gets cold, because we don't want our volunteers standing in the cold trying to gather signatures. And I believe we'll get it done August, early September.
Okay. So what happens next from this? I mean, you going to have another organizing meeting or?
No, I don't think that we even need an organizing meeting. These parents were pumped up, fired up, motivated. They even, as people were exiting the meeting, they said, we're going to go talk to our Salt Lake friends and make sure that they know about this. We want this to spread because it's a unified effort from school districts across the entire state.
Yeah. And certainly Park City's in the, kind of a different realm than many other people across the district. I mean, this could be a hardship to many people to pay that increase in income and sales taxes.
But they're also, they are, that hardship, let me back up. We are fortunate in Park City because we have the Park City Education Foundation. So and all the money is donated to Park City Education Foundation, 100% stay in Park City. So yes, we are special in that way, and I'm so grateful for that. I believe it's important for the students all over Utah to also benefit from increased per pupil spending. And it's already a hardship on families when they attend, the first day of school, they're asked for supplies. It's already a hardship on families because those students aren't valued the way students should be valued. Their teachers aren't valued the way the rest of the nation values teaching. We're dead last.
Okay, people want more information. Is there a Facebook page, a website?
Several Facebook pages. The one that's going to have the most update and current information is Our Schools Now Facebook page. And then our local schools here follow that page, and we share information as best we can. So you can go to all the elementary schools, all the schools in Park City have their own Facebook page run by parents. So you can check out those pages, and they'll have information as well.
Okay. Anything else, Christy, you think people should know?
No, we just appreciate all the parents that are willing to gather signatures and organize, and anybody, all the community members who are willing to just sign and find out more information, and hopefully we'll get it on the 2018 ballot. Thank you.
Okay, Christy, thanks for your time. It's 8:29. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, the Park City Council meeting and work session tomorrow starting at 2 o'clock, first to interview applicants for the Special Event Advisory Committee, then be meeting in closed session and be back in work session starting just after 4 o'clock. In the studio with a preview of some of those agenda items is City Manager Diane Foster, along with Sustainability Manager Celia Peterson. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
First, Diane, let's just start. How many SEAC Special Events Advisory Committee positions are we filling?
I believe we have three available positions. I think there are reapplicants for that. Two candidates are filling three-year terms that expire in June of 2020, and then one candidate to fill a term that ends in June of 2019.
Okay, so a decision's made when?
Council will actually go into closed session and have discussed the applicants, and so we expect appointment probably on the 20th.
Great. At 4:25, the council will discuss top priorities on historic preservation. Does the council have some top priorities, or are you trying to identify those?
Oh, the good news is council has a number of top priorities. It's interesting. We really appreciate that the community is aware and knows of the council's critical priorities of housing, transportation, and energy. The top priorities exist. They've been identified every year for the past 4 years. And they include things like affordability. They include clean soils, as you know from the Soils Commission you were part of. Historic preservation is one of those. And these are areas where we're doing work, we're doing good work, and it doesn't rise to a critical priority simply because we have a good trajectory. And I would say historic preservation is a great example of that, where we have a robust program, we have a grant program, we have two historic planners, we have a historic preservation board. It's just a wonderful program.
So we're just checking in with this to see that we're on track with what we hope to do?
That is one of the things that we'll be doing. Always with our top priorities, we do bring those to council. Community engagement's one of those, for example, right? We're doing a lot of it, and we still do updates for city council. I think there are a couple policy questions in there as well for city council.
Okay. Then at 4:45, a discussion on net zero buildings and facilities, staff asking council for direction on how to deal with those buildings and facilities that cannot meet net zero goals. So, Celia, how many buildings are we talking about?
So this is for all new buildings and facilities that will be constructed using municipal funds. And the focus is really on promoting the energy efficiency of all new buildings and facilities. So this we're looking at balancing on-site energy production with on-site energy consumption to make sure that we're using as little energy as possible in all of the new buildings and facilities that we're constructing. And this is in line with our climate goals. So that is net zero carbon by 2022 for municipal operations and 2032 for community-wide.
So when we talk about new buildings, I'm aware of maybe the streets and public utilities building. What else are we talking about?
Affordable housing, community center, and this covers everything from buildings to parks to outdoor plazas. We want it to be really comprehensive, so we're reducing our electricity and natural gas consumption as much as possible.
All right. So when we start talking about affordable housing, does that mean that we're putting solar panels on all of these, or...?
Solar panels, and then also looking at different ways that we can reduce the energy load that those buildings will be consuming.
Does that mean then they are built to LEED certified standards?
No, the focus is on performance. LEED is more of a design checklist. So we're looking at different certification pathways. One is a Living Building Challenge. They have a PEDL certification, and we specify the focus should be on energy for that one. Also, the Zero Energy Performance Index, ZEPI, that New Buildings Institute facilitates. Also, Passive House is another certification pathway. So we give options, three different options for the design team to follow, but all of those will lead us to net zero energy for our buildings.
So net zero is one thing, and then kind of being able to afford it is another. So is that the game here that we're trying
right.
to balance?
That's one thing that we're asking for council direction on. But as the industry develops, things are getting cheaper and cheaper. So we're switching, or I guess moving cost, operational cost, because about electricity prices are rising about 2 or 3% per year. So by spending on energy efficiency on the front end, we'll be saving operational costs in the long term.
Okay. So from here, you're just waiting for some direction before we start designing like Woodside Avenue Park and buildings like that?
Actually, Woodside Park, Phase 1, the 13 units there, that's on the Planning Commission agenda tonight. The teams are working on the energy efficiency on that. And one of the things that Celia is recommending in here that is important is actually the commissioning process, which says we don't only design these things to perform well. We actually get a third party to say, yes, they're performing how they should be.
So when we talk about that shortfall, I think it's about $1.3 million for the street and public utilities facility. Part of that had to do, though, was trying to be net zero, no?
Sure. And it's, Clint and I, water manager Clint McAfee and I were talking about that facility yesterday. And, yes, we do have requirements on that for significant energy efficiency. However, I don't want to ever be in a position to blame that, because we no longer want it to be the last thing we do. We want it to be the first thing we do. And as Celia talked about, this is very much a focus on efficiency. Environmental people always tell you that environmental efficiency and building a building correctly, insulating it right, that's like eating your vegetables. And things like solar panels, that's a dessert.
Okay. The city on microtransit re-advertising that request for proposal. I believe you met with folks earlier this week to talk about some new ideas. So where are we going from here with the RFP?
Yeah, Monday morning, Alfred, I saw a number of the taxi operators in town, and Alfred met with those. The intention of this particular report, and the reason we're doing it as a work session item, is to bring back to council and say, okay, this is what we heard. Just want to make sure we have it right, and we also wanted to be able to tell any bidders on this that, hey, this is what we're going to be asking for in the RFP. Council will say okay, and Alfred will move quickly to reissuing the RFP.
Okay. Do we have a timeline on that?
I believe there we'll see the – I would expect the RFP will be issued within the next 7 to 10 days.
Wow. Okay. So there's been some talk about why the city maybe doesn't just – provide its own microtransit. You have the buses, you have the drivers. I mean, for the, what, $358,000, you could lease cars for a year, no?
We actually believe it's cheaper to do it through the private sector. And as we saw with the local taxi operators, they wanted an opportunity. They didn't see the initial RFP, and that happens sometimes. And so if the private sector can do something better and cheaper, we never have a problem with that. You know, there are things that private sector does better than government, and I will say there are things that government does better than the private sector.
Yeah, and it seemed arbitrary in terms of where we were going to send this microtransit out to. Do we need to do some surveying of that to see who really will use it?
So this is very much a pilot program, and in pilot programs, Leslie, you're right, we don't always, you know, the intention of a pilot is we don't know everything, so we want to do some testing. There were a couple things going on here. One is the idea that we could augment some routes. So we do have some people, as you heard on Annie Oakley, concerned about a big bus running down there, so could we could that be a service that's provided in that area? As well as, we do believe that there are opportunities to actually replace big buses with microtransit, because like Aspen Springs, right? The bus doesn't necessarily go as deep into Aspen Springs as people may need to actually be a viable source. And we may get increased ridership if we replace a bus with microtransit in that situation. So this is really a test. It's all about learning.
All right, let's move on to new business. Bonanza Flat staff asking council to look at the Bonanza Flat open space planning framework and conservation easement timeline. Before we get into that, as city officials tell it, there's just so many moving parts to the purchase and maintenance of the open space. So are we talking about having to hire somebody to actually oversee all of this?
As a 1,400-acre piece of property, it's pretty significant piece of property. That may be a direction we go in the future. Right now, we're in the, I think we call it the ducks in a row phase, where we're working with Utah Open Lands to define, hey, what's the baseline? What are the, we all know that it's beautiful, there's wildlife, there's different flora and fauna. That needs to be cataloged so we understand what is it we're actually trying to protect. And then they can move into the phase, which Heinrich describes in the report, of working with various stakeholders and various interest groups in defining, okay, then how is the land going to be managed? How will it be used? And as part of that, very much looking at how are we going to make sure that those are all enforced?
Yeah. And you and I have talked about this before, but just the future financial burden of owning Bonanza Flat. I mean, do we even have any numbers on this yet?
We don't. You know, I had given an estimate of, you know, some of the initial work can be in the $100,000 range. And these costs tend to be an annual cost. For example, on the 7,000 acres of open space that we manage right now, some of those are development agreements, so we have other people helping to manage the property. But we spend, like, let's say, for example, on weed maintenance. If we look at all our properties, we spend between $80,000 and $100,000 a year on weed maintenance. It's incredibly important that we do that, and it's the right thing to do. However, it does have a cost.
Yeah, well, and have we even talked about just the enforcement costs, right? Because once you start limiting some of the uses, perhaps, at Bonanza Flat, you're going to need somebody to make sure that we don't have dogs in the watershed or camping anywhere they want to be or things
that's,
like that.
That's very much true, is the how do we enforce that property, particularly because it's not right in the city like a lot of our open space is. So we will be looking at that, and whether it be a volunteer program or we need to hire a ranger or two for the summer, those are absolutely things that we'll be looking at.
Okay. Anything else you two wanted to mention?
I do want to just highlight that we'll be having a first conversation with City Council. Staff is recommending that the Arts and Culture District, we've got these all on the agenda. Council could take action if they wanted to. We believe they do want to continue it to the 20th to allow the public more time to have some more discussions. We had a terrific turnout last night, thanks to all who attended. And so the 13th is both an opportunity to hear more about the Arts and Culture District. And that'll be, I expect it'll be right around 6:30 on the City Council agenda on Thursday. It'll also be the first opportunity for the public to provide formal feedback to City Council, so we do encourage people to attend.
Okay. Diane Foster, Celia Peterson, thanks for your time. KPCW News Time now, 8:43. Well, Summit County preparing to update its health code with regards to tobacco. In the studio to tell us more about the proposed changes, I have health educator Alyssa Mitchell. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what's the county looking to do? We've got new state and federal codes, so we have to change it here locally as well?
Yes, our current code is very outdated with terms and with regulations, and with all the new guidelines from the state and the federal government, we were tasked with making sure that our code was up to date and in compliance.
So what does Summit County need to do? I mean, what changes are we talking about?
Well, so for example, some of what's in the code, we're identifying and providing a clear definition on what a tobacco product is, including the popular electronic nicotine delivery system products. So whether that's e-juice, the device, and the regular, more traditional tobacco products we're all familiar with. So cigarettes, chew, and others.
So are these other ways of ingesting nicotine going to be as restrictive as what we have from the traditional tobacco cigarettes?
Yes, they will be. So state code currently anyone under the age of 19 should not be in possession of a vaping product. And also, we hold the vaping products to the same standard with the Utah Indoor Clean Air Act as well. They have to be 25 feet away from a public building in order to be using them as well. So they will fall under those guidelines. And we are also tasked from the state to be doing additional checks on the e-juice products to make sure that they're in compliance with the new standards they came out, which limits the amount of nicotine, has certain requirements for the warning labels. And so over the next year, we'll be working with our retailers to try and get them up to compliance. And so that's what part of this code did, was define what those were. And then we're going to be educating and working with our retailers to make sure they're up to speed.
So in terms of cigarettes, I mean, you can buy cigarettes mostly at any market, right? I mean, is that the same case for these ENDS products?
Yes. So you can, if you went down to the 7-Eleven right now, you would see somewhat of a variety of the ENDS products. You can get them at several different locations here in Summit County. We don't have any vape shops like you see along the Wasatch Front, but you can still purchase the products in other stores as well.
Okay. But again, that's not going to change.
No, and we're not looking to try and necessarily limit or put restrictions on stores on what kinds of products they can sell. We're just wanting to make sure that these products meet state and federal requirements and that stores are held to the standard of not selling these products to anyone under the age of 19 to reduce youth rates.
Okay, and so that's interesting, though, because you can smoke at 18, but you can't buy cigarettes until you're 19?
No. So the federal guideline, the federal set the lowest base guideline. So federally, if like you go into another state, they could have a smoking age of 18 years old. Here in Utah, we were able to increase the age to 19. So you cannot purchase cigarettes until you are 19 years old or any tobacco product. And some states have been successful in even raising that age to 21. I think Oregon was the most recent one to do so.
Okay. So does this have to go through any public process or anything, or is it just done internally?
So it is going through a public process because it is the Board of Health Code. It is currently up for public comment. So if anybody wants to go to our website, summitcountyhealth.org, and read over the proposed changes and provide a comment, they are able to do so until July 19th.
Okay. Anything else you think people ought to know?
Well, I would really just encourage people to not start these products. I encourage parents to do research online and talk to their youth about using these products and just help them understand that these are not, that especially the ENDS products, they're not safer. They're just different. They still contain nicotine and other harmful chemicals.
And just as addictive?
And potentially just as addictive, yes. The research is still coming out on that right now, but we're seeing that it's still just as addictive.
Okay. Alyssa, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
So let's read now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour on KPCW. Well, gaining fame on the fifth season of American Idol back in 2006, American country music artist Kelly Pickler will be performing in Park City this Sunday, July 16th at the Deer Valley Amphitheater as part of the Big Stars Bright Night series produced by Park City Institute. Kelly joins me now on the phone. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. So in the 11 years since American Idol, you've released four albums, I think the most recent one back in 2013. Do you've got some new music for Sunday show?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, I'm so excited. My husband and I have been working hard in the studio and trying to get new music put out. So we're looking forward to everybody hearing it.
Okay, so tell us who you're bringing with you. Do you have a band that you're touring with, or...?
I do. I have a band that I tour with, and we have a lot of fun. Our shows are songs from, you know, all four albums. We throw in cover songs here and there, and we have a good time. So,
okay. So in addition to the singing and, of course, the dancing on Dancing with Stars, my understanding is you've got the third season of the CMT's hit docu-comedy series, I Love Kelly Pickler, premiering next month. I haven't seen it, but what's that like? Sort of an open window to show the world, you and your husband's fun and challenges?
Well, we, first of all, we have just an amazing crew that we work with filming, and it's all positive and fun, and they're just short little 30-minute episodes and whatnot, and we keep it all positive and have a good time. It's my husband and our dear friends, and all positive, like I said. So we're almost wrapped up shooting season 3, and it premieres August 3rd, so on CMT.
Okay, so given, I mean, you've got the singing, you've got the dancing, you've got the TV show. I mean, music, has it taken more of a backseat for you as you do these other kind of creative projects?
We've actually been able to incorporate some of the new music into this new season, which has been exciting, the songwriting process and the studio process and just how a song comes to life. So that will be interesting to watch and just incorporate that back into the show. We really get to shine a light on things that matter. We actually documented one of our USO tours this past Christmas overseas in Iraq. And we get to use this opportunity to shine a light on the music, but more importantly, we get to shine a light on things that matter, like USO. Last season, we were able to shoot at the Vanderbilt Children's Hospital in Nashville and whatnot, and the Chris Kyle Memorial Benefit. And so we have a good time.
Yeah, those you
come.
Those
the
US...
music is still all present. So we tour around the shooting schedule. So
okay, the USO shows—they must be pretty gratifying, huh?
Oh my gosh, by far the most rewarding thing I think I've ever been a part of. Being able to take home to our servicemen and women serving all around the world—it is truly a blessing. And that's something my husband and I get to, you know, share together. And we were, like I said, able to document this last trip and make that an episode. So with this CMT show, we keep it positive and fun, and we get to shine a light on things that we're passionate about. But, yes, absolutely, the USO shows are incredible.
Yeah. You
last thing.
You will also be co-hosting as yet an untitled new syndicated talk show that debuts in September. So what's that going to be about?
This is actually, I'm so excited about. This is actually a lifestyle show. A co-host, Ben Aaron, we're co-hosting the show together. We get to shine a light on small businesses and people with great ideas and help them have their products come to life. The whole show is shoppable. We've partnered with the Home Shopping Network, and we get to, like I said, shine a light on people's ideas and help their dreams become a reality. So it'll be a fun show.
Okay, so have you been to Park City before?
I believe so. I don't know. I'm sure I have. 11 years living on a tour bus, surely we have been through there.
Okay. Well, again, she'll be here Sunday night, showtime 7 o'clock. People can find out more at parkcityinstitute.org. Have a great show, Kelly. Thanks for your time this morning.
Oh, thanks so much. Thank you so much. Take care.
KPCW News Time now, 8:59.